Are you working in research, trying to do the best science you can?
Are you a team leader, a research assistant, postdoc, PhD student, or any other type of scientist?
Are you looking for a place where you can sit, relax, and listen to inspiring people?
Well, we have good news for you. You've just found what you're looking for.
Hi everybody, my name is Renaud Pourpre.
And I am Jonathan Weitzman.
Welcome to the Lonely Pipette.
Helping scientists
do better science.
My name is Renaud Pourpre. I am a science communicator at the interface between science and society, and I am thrilled to hear my tips with a Lonely Pipette.
My name is Jonathan Weitzman. I'm a professor of genetics and epigenetics at the Université Paris-Cité in Paris. And I am relieved that we're back for season two.
That's perfect. So, Jonathan, we are back.
We're back!
It's been a while. It's been a long journey since this season two, and we are going a bit to talk about this.
So we're actually, this is a novelty for us. We're actually sitting in the same room. I don't think we've ever done the podcast actually in the same room.
So do you want to say a little bit about where we are right now?
So we're actually sitting in a very small, very cozy recording room at the on the university campus in Paris. So we've done everything by Zoom until now. So at the beginning of season one, we had to do it by Zoom because we were in the middle of confinement. And then we've just kept up the Zoom. So this is actually the first time I'd forgotten what you actually look like.
Yeah, it's like, you were growing a beard before, and I've seen that you have shaved it.
The beard has come on and gone off and come on again. And
No, but I'm super happy to be here. And especially this is a bit unique for this episode. We have this room.
Why don't we start, Renaud, with your origin story? I think that's where we always start, right? How did you become a science communicator?
Yeah, so just not to complete a bit what is in the probably in the final episode of the season one. After my PhD, I was struggling a lot with questions about what I wanted to do. And actually, Lonely Pipette was a kind of cure to know better how I could interact and keep working with research, which was not staying in research, actually, but just be part of this ecosystem and helping scientists do better science, not doing research by myself, but just trying to give this microphone to the researcher and give them voices. And Lonely Pipette helped me to build my career, to build me as a, I don't know, being legitimate in science communication. So why I'm doing this and what's my origin story behind this? All the tips that we got for season one and that we are going to find for season two, I'm not going to apply them for my life, my everyday life, but I'm so excited to learn more about it because this is how we better work together as a science communicator and with scientists, knowing better how is your life and having lived in a laboratory before and being still in interaction with a researcher today. I think this is a question I still need to know more about it, just to better interact with the people of this ecosystem and working with them.
To what extent do you think the tips from these people who are experimental scientists? To what extent do you think the tips are useful beyond a scientific career?
Can you think of a
particular tip from season one that you apply to your own career in science communication?
Yeah, actually, it's I know that not all the episodes had this particular topic about science communication, but most of them somehow they did some, like they are using Twitter and how they develop collaboration, how they interact with the other people outside the lab. I remember that Fiona Watts developed a whole ecosystem with different people around her research. I think all those tips about how to export your work and better collaborate with other people, which are either in the same field as you or outside of your field. I think all those tips were also useful for me to recreate my career. And because it's science communicator, it's not being alone. It's not being lonely. It's really find the best way to have synergies, collaborate with researcher and science to translate all these stories and messages to a broader public. So I don't have a particular tip, but all the excitement, all the way to be, you know, transparent, to commit, to talk with people and try to be better all together. I think it's just has helped to grow as I am now. So what about you now? What is it to still be you, researcher, professor, science communicator, all these hats you have today? Does Lonely Piper has helped you to grow with this?
So I noticed that the questions became, you have your favorite questions and I have my favorite questions, which is nice. So you always ask the origin story. I noticed that the people in the first episode gave very different answers about why they became them. And I thought what was really nice is we didn't get the same old story. So some of them told us things that maybe they haven't shared before. I was listening to Fiona Watt again, and she told us her story about looking for crocodiles when she was a kid. So that was nice. I've had a very tortuous or non-linear career, and I've spent many years going in and out of science communication. And the podcast has given me a way to like a platform to have a voice.
Yeah, because you're spending quite a lot of time doing this. Because
yeah, so I don't know when I would become a science communicator, because I think a lot of what I do is communicating science. The podcast made me sort of comfortable with the fact that I'm a science communicator and a scientist, and I can do both of them at the same time. And it has given so I said in the first introduction, this idea about scratching your own itch, mm-hmm. that more important than anything else was the chance to sit down with Fiona Watt or Bob Weinberg and just ask them questions that will give tips for me. And then we can, if other people find them useful, that's great. But I sort of did it more for me than anything else.
So it's like it was also kind of cure for you. Not a cure, but
just a little bit of therapy.
Yeah.
Well, it was like getting mentoring advice. So we'll come back to what have been doing in the last year. So I continued to think a lot about mentoring, and that was one of the real motivations, was how to get people to share their mentoring advice. So that was good. And I've been listening over the last few days. I've been listening to everything to remember what it was that we did. And so you talked about bringing positive energy. I remember that was one of the things you said.
Oh, really?
And
I
still find them sort of uplifting to listen to the first episodes, because there was a lot of positive energy. And I still find that even though it's, you know, I know what they're going to say, it's still good to hear it again. So that's been good. And I have been continuing to do science and science communication sort of at the same time. And we'll talk a little bit about what we've been up to since season one. So it was a while ago.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk today. We're just a very open conversation, just the two of us in this very cozy recording room. But the good news is there will be a season two. So we'll come back to that.
I mean, if we are here today, it's because we are committed to...
There will be a season two, but why don't we come back at the beginning of the Lonely Pipette? You were feeling a bit lonely, and you were thinking about how to construct a career away from the bench as a science communicator. So I know you've had a really exciting last few months. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you've been up to?
Yeah, thank you for asking this question first. I think this is a nice way to keep sharing who we are, and hopefully the listeners. Researchers will connect more with us at what we are doing. Yeah, I spent the last month building my career as an independent science communicator. But as I was saying, it's not because you have this title of independent science communicator that you're working alone. So I developed mainly one of a dream project, which was to for me, what is the best treasure we have in science and actually in cell biology, which are the images of microscopy. You know, it's a bit like the Lonely Pipette. I met another researcher and we were having this same frustration of having gigabytes of images and videos and not sharing them with a broader public, with the stories, because they are nice. Microscopy images are super aesthetic and super nice. They have an art side that we can really use to communicate. And they have also a lot of messages. So we just decided to create, again, another initiative, which is aligned with the Lonely Pipette, which is working with researchers to take all those images as far as possible, far away from the laboratories. And now, so it has built a documentary and an immersive show in a project that is called Cell Worlds. And the purpose of it
why did you choose an English name for Cell French, Worlds? Yeah. It could have been Le Monde Cellulaire.
Yeah, so actually the documentary is called Cell Worlds, Monde Cellulaire. So yeah, it was same. It was a French project.
You didn't spend a long time thinking about the name, did you? Like
Not the Lonely Pipette. It was obvious that it was Cell Worlds because we were like, okay, microscopic words are as diverse and rich than our microscopic world. So we wanted to really connect with this and have this theme of being in an entire universe.
So tell us a little bit, what's an immersive show? Because I don't think everyone would think of cell biology in this context. What is an immersive show?
So an immersive show is it's like an exhibition that you try to enhance, and you have different ways to do that. The first way is to bring some multi-sensorial aspect. So our immersive show is that you have a 360-degree projection around you. So the images are projected all around you. The walls are continue. So you have really the feeling that you are circled by this. The walls are 8 meters high. And you have a floor which is kind of doing like a mirror. So it increases the feeling that being in another universe, not on Earth anymore, but in somewhere else. So immersive is there because you have something that is really bigger than you. And you have a huge component of music, which just give you the feelings that you are taken into a completely different world. There are no voices. So you are just with you and your own questions.
So what it's like a big museum full of images that are moving all the time.
Yeah.
Would people walk through? Is that how it works?
Yeah, the good part of it is that it's because it's a cube, so you have four walls around you. So you can really walk around, but then there you have different choices. You can either sit in the middle of the room, or you can sit on a side of a wall, or you can just walk during the show.
How long do you think people will stay there?
So the show is 10 minutes, but it's repeating again.
Repeats every 10 minutes. Yeah.
At least the first and the second time, you don't see it the same way because you keep discovering stuff. There are too many surfaces to watch. So you need to go back and try to see the show in a different perspective.
And how educational is it? Do you want people to learn something, or it's just the experience? Visual images and the sound?
The purpose of the narrative in common of this immersive show and the documentary is that we have a strong connection between the images and the music. Music is a kind of universal language, so it helps us to raise emotions. And the purpose of the project is to wonder, to better touch and engage people with those thematics. They are not going to learn specific part of a cells or whatever. They are going to discover that cells are beautiful. They have behaviors. And they are somehow connected with our scale.
But is there a link or something where people will understand what the images that they just saw are, or not so much?
The show is built like you're alone by yourself. And at the end of the show, you have some elements that give you answers, that explain you a little bit what you have seen. That's why if you go back a second time, because you got those information at the end of the first time, you don't see the second time the same way.
It sounds a little bit like, I don't know if you've seen the Walt Disney Fantasia.
Yeah.
Seen Fantasia?
Yeah.
It was one of the first sort of, you know, animated films with music.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is narrative, but some of it is just images and trying to get the images and the music to talk to each other. It's Yeah, that's the, if we can create a content. So the purpose of this is if people like the immersive show, which is a public that is non-scientists, their the main public is more art and photography. If you connect with the exhibition, normally we build it to create a small frustration, to raise curiosity and want to know more. And this is when the documentary, which is free and this is on YouTube, will answer all of that.
So we'll put it in the show notes, but it's called Cell Worlds, yeah. And you can find the documentary. It's in French at the moment, right?
So it's in French and we have subtitles in English. We worked with 25 different laboratories.
Wow, okay.
And they all spread a bit all around the world.
So was it hard? So the museum in Bordeaux normally has these immersive experiences with works of art, right?
Yeah.
Was it hard to convince them to take microscopy and cell biology?
So that's a really interesting adventure because they didn't know what is the scientific ecosystem. This is a première. This is a scientific première and artistic, actually. We had to explain them how we work, how we will work with the scientists. And we were the link between the museum and the scientists. So the purpose was to explain them how we were going to work all together, being at this interface between the scientific ecosystem and the artistic ecosystem. So it was many hours of discussion to tell them how we are going to work. And actually, all of that was really positive. Everybody wanted to get the best of everybody. The museum has the structure, the knowledge of technical side, the knowledge of what the public is waiting for when you have an immersive show. And the scientists, they have the images and the story behind it. So we were in the middle and trying to see how both of the world can communicate.
And so, how has it been received by the public, journalists, and by the museum world?
The museum was super happy. It was really a first try for them, and they were quite impressed by the engagement of scientists behind all of that. I guess we will better know at the end of the year if it was a big success.
So it's opened. It's now open in Bordeaux.
Yeah, it's
until 1 year. When?
It's until the January 2nd or 3rd of 2023.
Okay, great. So
and the documentary is free and eternal. Okay. Yeah, I think I will maybe finish on that. Is the purpose of this project was really to bring those worlds together. And I guess this is also how Lonely Pipet helped me to keep working in that way, because I guess this is also what we are trying to do, is trying to connect with people that are far away, trying to bring those messages between communities that never talked together. This is how Lonely Pipet helped me to build this career, to comfort me in the way that I wanted to keep working at those interfaces. And I know that you like also those.
Yeah, I'm sure I told you many times. Yeah. I think the most exciting things happen at interfaces, so where things interact, or where in the gray between the black and the white. So yeah, I think I've probably told you in class. That's where they're going to be really exciting. All the exciting jobs of the future are going to be these jobs that don't yet exist, but that are interface jobs. So.
How is that working for you? Like, what have you been up to with this moment of gap between season one and season two, and how Lonely Pipet was part?
So I've just been sitting waiting for season two. sitting at home feeling lonely. No, it's been so we should say that there was always going to be a season two, but I don't think we thought it was going to take so long. So we've been really busy. I've been trying to run the lab. This has been good. We published a paper in a big paper in 2021, yeah. Which is in Nature Communications, which was about new epigenetic marks on the parasite genome. It took a long, long time to get there, but we were really excited to see it come out. And then we, I like to do things that I haven't done before. So we've been doing some drug screening, and we have a paper actually under second review, about drug screening, new drug screening platform. And then I have two students who have coming towards the end of their PhDs, or one has just finished and one is still going. And they both have very unexpected stories from the lab. My student, Mary, defended her PhD. So that's, in France, you can only have two students at a time.
Yeah. And she also won a Women in Science prize, which is great. I'm very proud of her. And she's publishing papers, still have more papers to publish. So that was that was good. And then writing grants. So this is always. The lab has just got the label from the Fondation de Recherche Médicale. So the Fondation de Recherche Médicale, the Medical Research Foundation, has just selected our team to be one of the supported teams. So that's a big deal. And that's the team. And then we have, you know, in France, you have to have lots and lots of little grants from cancer charities, from the ANR, from the university. So constantly writing grants and writing papers. So that's been good. Yeah, and I've been trying new stuff. I was on the radio. So I was on French radio with my humble French accent, talking about PhD supervision. So a book just came out, which has raised a lot of questions about how PhD students are supervised. It's very much in the theme of the Lonely Pipette. Actually, when I talk about this, I always say to people, go and listen. You know, even if you get a terrible experience, go and listen to some of the great mentors that are there. That's why we created this archive of mentoring experience and inspiration. But I have become very, very involved in worrying about how to improve PhD supervision. We can talk about that a bit.
How was the experience of being in live? Because
actually, it wasn't live. It was through Zoom. Okay. It felt like being the Lonely Piper.
We are quite at the highest.
Yeah, actually, it was even worse than Zoom because no, they don't told us to cut our camera, so we couldn't even see each other. So that's why if you listen to it, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for him to ask me a question so I can actually speak. And it was the frustrating. We were on live for an hour, but I only got a few seconds. That's radio. So I was really grateful for the Lonely Pipette that we take the time and people can really express themselves. Yeah. So
because there are topics those topics they need time to.
They
to
need time, but there were three of us, and then they had the jingles and the this and the that, and I only got. And actually, because we were not in the studio, they said, you know, if you have something to say, you can just tell us, I have something to say, and we'll, yeah. So I kept saying, I have something to say. And they said, yeah, we heard you. We know you have something to say. So I don't know if you listened to it, but the other two guests were very, I felt very negative about.
That's good that you were there. Actually,
so I was there. I felt that my role was to bring a little bit of positive. Mm-hmm. So of course there are things that can be proved, but even if 20% of students suffer, that means 80% of students have a good experience. So, and of course we need to deal with the 20 so that everyone has a good experience. Yeah, but we shouldn't paint this picture of it's all broken. It's not all broken, but there are things that need to be improved, and I'm massively invested in trying to do.
I believe that's great that you have been there because, we know we are talking sometimes of topics that are not all the fun. It's not always the fun in the lab, but I like this. It's not being blind or wishing to not see what's real, but I really prefer to keep discussing with people in a positive way that how we can improve that, which is what you're working for and which is your mission that you have.
Helping scientists because to better if, science. Yeah, that's because what we're trying to do.
If you, I mean, complaining is good because you raise a topic, but then what you do with the problem, you need solution.
So I think this book and this debate is really important and it's raising really important issues, but I don't think it's proposing enough solutions. So that's where I'm on the doctoral school and I'm supervise and run a lot of programs and I'm really interested in solutions or not even solutions, just improvements.
Yeah.
I mean, this is hard because some there are podcasts that spend a lot of time complaining about how terrible it is to do a PhD, which is great if people have things to complain. But I always was concerned for the Lonely Pipette. It's too upbeat. It like makes it sound that, you know, everything's great.
I mean, we are not saying that bad stuff don't happen, but it's just that we choose to pick the way we want to improve this. I mean, we are not erasing the problems when we talk with the guests. We are listening to them and we ask them to tell us. But every time if there is something they tell us, we just want to bring, okay, what do we do with that now? How we can improve this.
So you have the same problem. I know you wanted to be a science communicator, and now you're already in museums, and you've made a documentary, and you're running a podcast, and you're doing workshops and all this. So did anything not work this year? Did you have things? What's your a failure that you've learned from?
I think. Let me think about this. It's about cell words, actually. Now it's a success, but we started by failing, actually, because the big problem of this kind of new narratives around science in a new places is like you need to convince people. For the documentary, we applied to have fundings, and the first time we got rejected. They say, we don't understand what you want to do. They told us we were rejected from the fund because we didn't fit in that. It's like they didn't understand what we wanted to do. They didn't understand the project. And so it's either we were not communicating well what we wanted to do, or it's been that maybe we knocked at the wrong door. So we just took a moment to sit, talk about that with my collaborator, and we tried to see, okay, if we believe in the idea and want to push it, it's not meaning that this is bad. It's just that maybe we need to improve something, or we need to find somebody else to do this with.
That's a lonely pipette sort of tip, right?
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like we were not beaten down by then. Actually, that's why I really
liked... I listened to Wendy, and she starts by saying, you know, yeah, how important it is that we don't talk enough about how important it is to be able to fail.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, it's like I believe that the second case we sent for the funding, first of all, I think we sent to a better one, and the one that was really for us. The funding is called Savoir and Culture, so knowledge and culture. So it was perfectly for us, better than the other one. And also, we really reshaped the way we were talking about the project, the objectives, what we wanted to do.
Maybe it wasn't that clear in your own mind at the beginning.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. And this helped us to really just sit down again, talk again, what are the objectives, why they should invest in us. And also, I would share something else, probably. It's another Lonely Piper tips, I think. When we were asking for researchers to collaborate, there are some times that researchers, most of the time, because they are busy, we understand that, researchers didn't answer. Some of them were really reactive.
No, there are people who don't answer emails.
There are some.
Really?
Some. But we insisted a lot. And I need to say that. It's like we send to some researchers, we send maybe 20 emails. Like, I'm not exaggerating, I think. And at a moment, when his attention was caught by it, so we tried to reach him by email, by Twitter and everything. We really wanted him to be part of the project. When we had this first discussion, he just realized almost the big mistake he has done to almost missed it. So the tips will be, sometimes it's not they don't want or they ignore you. It's just that they are too busy and they just don't see it. So don't be afraid to send 20 emails, because at the end, the collaboration was just great and he was one of the scientists most involved in the project. What about you? Do you have some failure conferences?
I don't have any failures. I don't know. Only successes. Every grant works. Every paper gets in. No, of course we do. But I was just thinking about it. I think coming back to this PhD supervision, so it's become, I think it's one of my latest, as if I needed another campaign, but it's one of the things I've become particularly moved about, watching student suffering.
Okay.
And I think as I have been in positions of senior positions, I guess a failure is that I didn't manage to change the culture. I didn't manage to create an environment in which everyone treats their students the way I think students should be treated. And I take this actually quite personally as a sort of personal failure. But I'm going to keep working to improve and to think about ways to improve in my own sphere and the people. But yeah, I do take it as a rather personal failure that I haven't managed to help create a better culture.
It's a long mission. It's a tough.
Yeah,
tough
yeah.
Mission.
But I still have a few years left. I'm going. It's going to be one of, in addition to all the other things I do. But it is going to be something. You know, we all talk about student suffering. So I just want to say one more thing. Not a failure. Just this idea that students, we underestimate where people are coming from and what people are going through. So I have a student in my lab from Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
and that's been a real. It's been difficult because her family's at war. you know, we try to keep the podcast, you know, not timely. But we were in COVID when we started, and mm-hmm. we talked about it a little bit, but not so much. Now the world is at war again, and students who are away from their families, and lots of researchers in lots of efforts to think about how to reach out to help people who are in difficult situations. So we actually created a financial fund to help students last year when some of our students from Lebanon were particularly suffering economically because their parents had lost a lot during the explosion in Beirut. So we have tried to create some tools to help students who are in financial difficulty. But it's really hard to concentrate on your mini preps when your country's at war. So we have a responsibility for student welfare generally and for better supervision. Yeah. Well, I have one of the questions that I always wanted to ask, and it didn't work that well. But so what are you reading at the moment? What books on your bedside table?
Oh, that's I'm not so last year, I think at this moment I was reading a book, but now I'm not reading anymore. I'm just listening to book. I just bought
audiobooks.
Yeah, I just bought two of them. One is called Atomic Habits. This is something really about productivity or how to change your habits. I really want to listen to it or read it.
Okay.
Listen to it because it's how tiny changes can have big consequences.
Okay. When I talk about epigenetics, you know, I keep changing my slides, but the slides I'm using at the moment start with this sentence that epigenetics is the study of small changes with big impacts.
Okay.
So, you know, these tiny little, you know, methylation and acetylation, they're the smallest of modifications, but they cumulatively have a big impact. So, yeah. So that's what the book's about.
Yeah. So I cannot tell more, but I've bought a second one, which is called How to Be Okay. No, How to Be Happy with Being Disliked. Something like that.
Okay.
I think
is that a problem for you?
It's not a big problem. I feel that it can be really rich in learnings to be okay to not please everyone or to because I feel that I've grown on that. But I feel that before I was quite afraid of not being accepted for some parts of works, social and all of that. I was just navigating on the internet. I saw the title. I say, okay, let's give it a try. Let's see what it's like.
So are you reading some?
I'm rereading actually a book called it's called Being Mortal by Atul Gawande.
Okay.
Who's he's an Indian-born American doctor, and he wrote a book about how society is dealing with old age
Wow.
It's an end of life. It's not an easy book. It's very easy to read, but it's he's raising very important questions. And as I grow older and my parents grow older, I'm you know, something I think we don't do very well. I have a book, so I have lots of books at home in the toilet plunge into. So lots of books of poetry, but also I'm reading a book. It's called Calmer, Easier, Happier Parenting. It's by someone called Noel Janice Norton.
Do you want to confess something?
What I like about it, so this book is, it's a parenting book, which is, you know, being a parent is really hard and no one ever tells you how to do it. And there's no podcast mentoring for parents. The Lonely Parent. But what I like about this book is the title. It doesn't say it's not calm, easy, happy parenting. It's calmer, easier, happier. It's the idea that we can all be a bit better at what we're trying to do, a little bit calmer, a little bit. And it's very practical skills. I think so. It's written about how to deal with little kids, but actually, I think it applies also to bigger kids and even to big kids in the lab, like I think some of the things are interesting about how to manage people without making them feel they're being managed. So it's interesting. So I plunge into it every so often, but I'm actually was reading that this week as well, but only on the toilet.
So maybe you will bring back some tips from that. Should we share a bit but will be in season two.
So we said when we, so you convinced me that we should do it in seasons, okay? Because you felt that we needed a break. So we've taken a break.
Yeah.
I should say something, you know, I guess everyone hears this every 2 weeks and maybe thinks that we're recording every 2 weeks. I think we said this in the first season. I had read somewhere that most podcasts start and have 5 episodes and stop. And so to yes. overcome this, you know, dying out after 5 episodes, we started by recording the 10 episodes of yeah, season one before exactly. we started.
I mean, not the last one.
The last one we did live. So so we've done the same. So if we're ready to record this first episode of season two, it's because we've recorded. So we have 14 interviews.
Yeah, it's more than season one. It's four more.
Yeah, so we have four. So it took us a long time to get them all together. They're almost all done. We've got a couple of stars who are still trying to nail down the dates, but it's been hard. I think it's probably one of the reasons it's hard. It was the post-COVID. So
yeah,
the first season we did during COVID and people were home and they were bored.
They were having and more time for us.
Now everyone's back to, well, not normal, but everyone's busy again. So yeah, that's been really hard to do. We have lots of surprises. So we actually know what's in store. We're not going to give you any names. So we're going to give names.
No. I actually, we can say that if people listen to it right now, they can go on our Twitter page account and they can really try to guess, but this time the banner will not show all the people.
Okay, so you can guess from the silhouettes. Okay, so
yeah, which is not easy.
So what were your aspirations for season two? What are we trying to do?
We wanted to keep exploring those topics of mentoring, sharing science, diversity, inclusivity, such. It's broad topics that we never talk inside the lab. So we try to just aim broader this season. We try also to push ourselves into other worlds.
Yeah. So I said on when we summed up season one that we called all these people, you know, Bob and Fiona, Wendy and Maria Elena and Odette. We called them all by their first names because we felt they were like friends.
Yeah.
And actually, most of them were friends of mine in my. So we stepped a little bit. We've made some new friends, right? We stepped a little bit beyond our comfort zone or beyond our worlds.
Yeah, I believe we can say that we decided to not make it easier for us, like trying to explore people that are doing other stuff, still being in the lab, working in the lab, but having those profile a bit different. And exploring if we can bring those tips back to research. So I guess people, without saying too much, I think people would be, I mean, we enjoy it, right? We enjoy doing this and trying to push ourselves into those water. No, how do we say? Blurry water zone.
Murky waters.
Yeah, murky waters.
They're not all molecular biologists or cell biologists. Yeah. So we could have... In future seasons, we could go probably even further.
Mm-hmm.
So we stepped out a little bit. This is very much in response to the request. People keep saying, and you're going to just do biologists. So so some of them are not biologists, right? So they're not cell and molecular biologists.
Yeah, some of them are working with biologists.
Yeah, and some of them are people who people asked us whether we're going to stay in academia. So we've stepped a little bit beyond academia. We tried to even more, but we didn't get everyone we wanted. Some interesting people changed jobs and I guess were busy with the job changing. We hope we get them back in the future. So we've kept diversity again. We've tried to have young beginning of career and end of career. What's interesting is we're going to start as the Lonely Pipette will go on. We'll see some mentors and mentees who know each other or came out of the same labs. So you could play a little game to try and connect
the people
with other people. But, and we have some surprises.
It's out to not give spoilers of what is in it. But I guess what we wanted to do is to push it more broader to see if in different fields or in different profile, there are some other way of working or the vision of science that could enrich each other.
Yeah, we chose to keep the same questions. So I actually I like the continuity of the questions because we get to see if we change the questions and the guest every time, then we don't see patterns.
Exactly.
So we've added a few questions and taken a few away.
Yeah.
We try to keep the same sort of pace.
So what's the objective for season two?
So one of the objective, one of the things I think I've missed most is the community. So mm-hmm. we had underestimated how much uptake there would be and how much that we would create a TLP community. And I miss interacting with them. So that's going to be great. And people would tell us when they were listening and what they were listening and how. And so
please keep doing this. Yeah, this is giving us so much energy.
So this is great. So I missed that. So this community building and reaching out, I think that was important. And the other thing that's a little bit different in season two is that a lot of these people have other things that they do. So one of our guests is also writing novels. One of our guests is writing cookbooks. Mm-hmm. So one of our guests, and some of them are very, very, very involved in sort of mentoring or campaigning for diversity, better diversity.
I hope like it will bring you as much as energy as the first season. And just, we should just say, keep sharing it. Because I think why Lonely Pai Pai was the start of this adventure was so good is because people were sharing it and we can thank them.
But you know, we were sitting alone in our rooms with our newly bought microphones. Now we're starting to travel again. So we hope that people will get again those experiences of being in the bar and chatting to mentors or people that they have always looked up to. Maybe the Lonely Pipette we'll find a way to be involved in scientific conferences. Mm-hmm. So we're sponsoring an event in Paris, and we hope that conferences will be a place to a platform to talk about some of the issues we talk about. And maybe if you're organizing a conference, a little workshop from the Lonely Pipette would be that'll be something we'd be really happy to do. If you have a community of scientists and you think that we can help them become better scientists, we'd love to come.
Sure all the time.
And Renaud can bring all his beautiful images of cells, and I think the last question was always, what would you say to yourself if you met yourself 20 years ago?
yeah I think we should answer that. So do you want to start or should I start?
I can start. I think the Lonely Pipette was this project that I thought about for a long time and just didn't find the chance, the way to do it. So I know Maria Elena said, just do it. just find the time and just do it. I think it's really important to, I would tell myself that your legacy is not just the papers you publish. It's all your contribution to the community. So that can be improving PhD supervision or getting mentoring voices out there and publishing and teaching and all the things. It took me a long time to feel comfortable enough to do the things that I thought, it'd be good if I did them. So thanks, Renaud, for helping me, give me all the technical skills to actually turn this into reality. Just if you have an idea for a new project, just do it. What about you, Renaud? What would you have said if you met yourself, not 20 years ago, because you're so young, but
I remember that when I was young, I saw, there were this kind of scheme where you have, the nerd is alone on his side. He's doing science and he's just like alone and weird and nobody's talking to him. And on the other side, you have all the people that are on stage sharing or talking with people. And you have those two sides that never match in the popular culture. And when I was young, I remember that it was in college. I just told myself, like, please, if you need to commit to something, like, try to be good at school. Like, try to be good, work well. But please, after school, just try to rock your life like people on stage. Like, just enjoy party, be social, this kind of stuff, because I wanted both.
I think this is, talk about the last few months. This is a recurring theme, that not to just be a whatever. So, yeah. So I sometimes people say, what do you do? And I say, I'm a podcaster. So last week I was in Oslo in Norway, and it was a workshop about new approaches to education. And I was talking about my art science project. So I have an art project, science project called Académie Vivante, that I'm extremely inspired and invested in. And someone said to me, oh, are you an artist? And I was like, no. And then I thought, well, yes, yeah. I mean, we're all artists, right? So yeah, I am. I don't know if you know, I draw every day. I send a picture to my family every day. So I've been trying to draw or take a photo every day and do this, you know. So this idea that you're not one thing or something else, but you can be more than one thing at the same time. And that's why season two was great, because I don't want to say I used to be a podcaster. I want to say I am a podcaster, and I'm also running a lab and teaching and whatever. So that's perfect.
So
a bientôt.
Yeah, a bientôt.
So that's it for this episode. Thank you for joining us at the Lonely Pipet.
We hope that you learned something new, that something resonated with your own experiences, or that you just enjoyed the science.
Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at Lonely Pipet, and please share it with your friends in the lab. If you want to join our community, you can subscribe to the Lonely Pipet mailing list or mail us by following the link available on our Twitter profile. You will receive the next episodes directly in your mailbox. How cool is that?
Stay tuned for the next show, and remember, you might feel like a lonely pipette, but it doesn't mean you're alone. Tips from the Lonely Pipette can help you to do better science.
A bientôt!
A bientôt!